Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron, and special guest today, editor at the Bird Writes and co-host of the Bird Calls, Ali Cosell. What's up?
Hey guys, how you doing? Just got done with a media day. As everybody knows who's ever attended one of these things, it's long. But you know what? Optimism is high, so you kind of just feed off that energy.
I'm feeling the energy from New York.
Well, now you were asking questions all day. Now it's our turn to ask you a ton of questions about the Pelicans. So before we get started, as always, a quick reminder, you can check out the podcast on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio. And before we look forward to next year, we're going to look back at last year. You know, Pelicans 48-34, second round loss to the Golden State Warriors in five games. Obviously, the big news in January, February, DeMarcus Cousins went down. They made the Mirotić trade. You know, Anthony Davis was a monster. But Ali, what were your thoughts on last year with the Pelicans?
No, it was two different seasons. You know, you've got to divide the team right with what you just mentioned. And that's DeMarcus Cousins' injury, because they became a completely different team in both the style and in basically who emerged as leaders, who became the key really focal points. So, you know, you kind of just got to go past and move beyond that DeMarcus Cousins era, because it's over. He went to the Golden State Warriors, and there was really no chance on re-signing him, guys. Once he got hurt, and the Pelicans had such a limited amount of funds to spend this offseason, even though they did try and re-sign him, regardless of whatever anybody says, they did try and re-sign him, but they went a different direction once he felt like the offer wasn't enough. And you know what? I think it's a good thing for the team, because as we all saw, they ran off 10 straight wins. The 9 straight wins that included, you know, that 4-game sweep of the Trailblazers in the playoffs. So they stumbled upon an identity, which is to run faster, which is to be able to be more versatile on defense, and to basically rely on their athleticism of Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday, and just kind of, you know, have everybody feed off of that. So they've stumbled on something, and they've continued to do that with all their offseason moves, which I'm sure we'll discuss.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the tale of two seasons last year. Actually, I really liked this team when they had Cousins healthy. The Davis and Cousins pairing, I was always just really intrigued by. I thought having those two talented big men was kind of like the formula to maybe defeat the Warriors because of the rebounding differential. And then obviously Cousins got hurt and that all developed and went a different way. But like you mentioned, I mean, this team down the stretch, obviously they got hot. They found identity. And I mean, Drew Holiday, who kind of looked out of sorts at times when Cousins and Davis were out there on the floor, he really emerged as, you know, a true two-way defender. And obviously in the playoffs, him and Davis were just a combination that tore apart the Blazers.
Yeah, Drew Holiday's best role is actually not being a third wheel, because it's really, or at least, you know, in the last 2 years, he's had a really difficult time of finding and picking his spots. That's where you're right. He'd have a decent game and then he would just disappear for the next two or three games. And last season started off very much in the same manner. And they really needed him too, because if you may remember, Rajon Rondo, he was out about 4 to 6 weeks at the start of the year because of an oblique injury. So a lot of responsibilities fell on Drew, and he was real slow out of the gates. And that's why the Pelicans kind of got off to that, you know, kind of a mixed start. And they basically rode that to an 18-18 start up until the new year. And it wasn't until around that time when they finally figured things out with Boogie. Once they got going, everything fell apart. But yeah, Drew Holiday is definitely a key, but I feel like he's in the prime or in a good spot now to keep it going. Both in terms of his confidence being high. I talked to his trainer at length, who I know really well, Mike G, and he basically said, I've never seen Drew Holiday like this in terms of his confidence, in terms of his just thought processes on the season during an off season. So entering it, we don't know, but this is uncharted territory, and that just bodes really well. Everybody saw what this guy did in the playoffs. He, to the tune of 28 points a game, bunch of assists, bunch of rebounds against the Blazers, and he still played really well against the Warriors, where usually everybody struggles. So everybody, the hope is and everybody thinks that Drew's going to be able to carry it over.
Talking about Drew and talking about that Blazers series, were you surprised when they swept them? Obviously, you know, a lot of talk around that time was everyone was looking the Blazers to win, you know, 6 or 7 games, and the Pelicans had a chance, but nobody really expected a sweep. What were your thoughts on that?
Nick, if you go back and look on the website, I was the only one to pick them to win in 5 games. And I said a sweep wasn't out of the question. And I wasn't being a biased fan. I wasn't delirious. But I went back and I looked through a lot of things. I looked at how well the Pelicans were playing, how well this unit with Nikola Mirotić was playing, And then you looked at how poorly the Trailblazers were playing leading up to the playoffs. I couldn't understand why all 22 ESPN people picked Portland. Not one person for New Orleans. When there was enough facts, enough data to where at least it was going to be a competitive series. And like I said, I wrote and I talked on every airwave that, you know, brought me on, whether radio stations or podcasts, that I thought the Pelicans were going to make mincemeat out of the Portland Trailblazers. So I'm tooting my horn, guys. I saw it coming.
All right, big props on that, especially with a lot of people, like you said, picking the Blazers. I remember, I think Preston did pick the Pelicans, and I was like, he almost convinced me on that podcast because him and I did a preview of that, and I was like, oh, I went with the Blazers. But honestly, looking in hindsight, it's like, oh, why? But Corey, what were your thoughts on that?
I mean, I know I picked the Blazers in six, I believe. So obviously I was off too. I mean, yeah, I mean, even though the Blazers were the 3 seed, they just looked undermatched. Lillard didn't play very well, and obviously the Pelicans' defense on him was just extraordinary. They took him out of the game, basically. And that team is just so heavily driven by McCollum and Lillard. And if you take one of those two guys out, they're going to struggle offensively. And obviously, Davis, Jrue Holiday, I mean, they both just played at another level. And they really just wiped the floor. I guess I didn't look at the data enough, probably. But I was still shocked, you know, and obviously the one dunk that Davis had on Nurkic and then Jrue Holiday pointing at him afterwards. I mean, that image just is imprinted in my mind.
Talking about
great. A lot of shirts now, by the way.
It's always good. You want to get some t-shirts, get those out there. But what was the biggest highlight of last season?
Oh, it was definitely that run to end the season. The way they went 20-8 to grab a pretty good seed in the playoffs when it looked like they were on the outside looking in. And then, of course, steamrolling the Trailblazers. Now, one thing you've all got to mention is that, yes, they were the number 3 seed, but you know what, guys? Between 3 and 8, only 2 games separated all the teams. And you can even go one more. The Denver Nuggets, who just missed out, being just another game out of that. So it was such a tightly knit race all the way through the season. That's why I just gave no credence whatsoever to the seedings when a lot of people, unfortunately, did. So you got to look at the data at times like that.
Yeah, that's very true. Corey, highlight for you, though.
I mean, probably just Anthony Davis in general. I think from start to finish, even when Cousins was there, he kind of took a backseat role offensively to Cousins. It was just so evident on a nightly basis that how good Anthony Davis was. He was still the best player on the team, even though Cousins was getting all the numbers. And then obviously when Cousins went down, Davis again became, you know, the forefront. And I just think he's got to be in the race this upcoming year for MVP. And I just think last year was him kind of breaking out. And he stayed relatively healthy too, which was something that in the last couple of years he'd been getting banged up. And last year he stayed pretty healthy.
Yeah.
Well, I just got to say, Corey, that's a great observation because coming in the season, nobody really talked about it, but we all thought that DeMarcus Cousins' shadow just loomed large because of his personality, right? So we thought AD would wind up taking a back seat. And sure enough, he did. It wasn't until his injury that, you know, AD became MVP AD. So, yeah, good observation for the people who quite didn't understand how it worked last season.
Thank you.
Definitely get that feel. And for me, the Blazer thing and the Blazer sweep is obviously a huge highlight, but I think it doesn't happen without the Mirotić trade. I think that was a big highlight to make that move. And some people questioned at the time, obviously Mirotić had like that really hot stretch with the Bulls and was like, will he keep this up? Why do you think Mirotić fits so well with the Pelicans and kind of allowed them to play a certain way?
Well, of course, number one is undoubtedly his perimeter shooting. And that's something that that Pelicans team, you know, outside of Darius Miller and Etuan Moore, really struggled with. And that's to keep the floor spaced enough for both Jrue Holiday and Anthony Davis. And, of course, they had other guys who preferred to take everything to the rim, like Rajon Rondo. So when DeMarcus Cousins got hurt, it was kind of a blessing in disguise, actually, because they were able to land Nikola Mirotić, and he just fits the team better. And that's one thing you've got to also remember. It's not just that he's a good three-point shooter. He does so many other things well. As for we've seen Ryan Anderson alongside Anthony Davis, and that really, that experiment went nowhere. The reason Mirotić did is because this guy also defends at least 3 different positions. He was able to guard 5s last year, even some small forward, which everybody thinks he's going to do again this year, as well as rebound. You know, he's such a versatile player, and he doesn't get recognized for any of those abilities, unfortunately. But I think people are coming around to that. He's just a really good ball player, guys. I mean, he was a EuroLeague MVP when he's back over there playing. So this guy's not, you know, he's not mincemeat or anything.
Yeah, he's not just a three-point shooter. He can do other things. And I think you definitely saw that with the Pelicans. On a negative note, what was the biggest disappointment of last season?
Oh, well, it would be easy to say DeMarcus Cousins. But again, to me, since I'm calling a blessing disguise, I'll go elsewhere. I'm going to say it's the fact that they had to play Etuan Moore out of position at small forward. And that was a weakness, you know, night in, night out against the big, good teams that had the bigger forwards, like, for instance, Minnesota Timberwolves. The Pelicans couldn't beat them to save their life because Etuan was matched up against Jimmy Butler or Andrew Wiggins, and then, of course, Drew Holiday had the other one. And while Drew Holiday's a great defender, they just consistently gave up size in that matchup. And then we saw, of course, having issues with the LeBron, Kevin Durant, as we saw in the postseason. So it was Etuan Moore being forced to play small forward, and that was because Solomon Hill got injured. He ripped his hamstring last August, and so he pretty much missed the entire season. I mean, I know he came back, but he was just a shell of being a shell of himself because he's not the most pivotal player, guys, but again, you've got to understand he was going to be penciled in as a small forward, and the only thing the team really needed from him is just playing that good, solid defense, being able to guard, like I said, multiple positions. Just that's something the Pelicans really, really, really make a priority, and just add some playmaking and shooting. So not having that, they luckily were able to get away with Etuan Moore, but that was the biggest disappointment. They had a big gaping hole small forward, and a lot of good teams took advantage of that.
Yeah, my disappointment were the two injuries that stuck out to me, which obviously was the Cousins injury and then the Solomon Hill injury. Obviously, Hill only played 12 games last year. He's making, I think, $12 or $13 million a year, which he got, you know, obviously when the cap went up a couple of years ago, he was a beneficiary of that. And like you mentioned, you know, him being gone made Etuan Moore have to play out of position. And Solomon Hill, before he got hurt, was kind of showing some promise. He was starting to develop a three-point shot that last year with the Pacers. And obviously, he was a solid wing defender. I'm actually looking forward to seeing him healthy and out there this year. But those two guys, and then maybe Ian Clark, I kind of felt like he underwhelmed last year. Obviously, he only shot 31% from three, and I felt they could have really used him from beyond the arc if he was more efficient like he was with the Warriors.
Yeah, that's a great point, Corey. And he was a guy, I feel like they signed him, and some people were kind of excited about it, and it didn't really work out. But like you guys said, the injuries are always disappointing. But moving on, looking at this year's rankings, OTG Power Rankings created by our writers, the Pelicans are coming in at number 8. Now, is this too high, too low? Is it a fair ranking? What are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I've got to be honest. I think it's too low. And again, it's not the bias, being a hometown New Orleans fan and all that. But you've got to look at what that roster that finished the season, what they were able to do on the basketball court. And that is to be able to run other teams off the court. They were by far the fastest team over that last third of the season. They have a great amount of shooting, incredible defense, especially when the games got close. They played really top five lockdown defense. And so this season you're replacing Rajon Rondo, who honestly, guys, wasn't playable for a lot of times during the first half of the season. He didn't become that playoff Rondo until about the time Boogie went down, when, of course, his role grew. But before that, he was honestly a liability out there because defensively, teams were taking advantage of him. Offensively, people were daring him to shoot the three. For instance, I remember in a game against the Mavericks that we lost to right before New Year's, Rick Carlisle just dared Rajon Rondo to shoot the ball as to where he'd have whoever was guarding him play at least 8 to 10 feet away from him. And that basically took the Pelicans right out of their game. So anyways, getting back to the topic, a lot of these guys that they've brought in this offseason are basically just either copies of what they already had or just adding to what was made successful last year. So again, picking them 8th when I saw them rip apart a Portland Trail Blazer team, and honestly, they should have probably taken 2 games off the Warriors. Picking them 8 is a little low in my book. I think they're just a more rounded, better team. And I guess they just have to prove it on paper, which, you know, when you look at names like Cousins, like Rondo being or going elsewhere, that looks like a negative. But again, you've got to look at what they did, that body of work over that last third of the season and what they added to that. And it's going to help, guys. Julius Randle can play in a fast-paced offense, and he's versatile defensively. Same thing with Elfrid Payton. He was born to push the ball. So there's a lot of positive, guys, and I think, yeah, number 8 is underselling it.
What teams would you put under them? You know, I'll read you off the top 8 real quick. Number 1, we got the Warriors, obviously. Number 2, Celtics. Number 3, Rockets. Number 4, Raptors. Number 5, Sixers. Number 6, Jazz. And number 7, Thunder. Which of those teams do you think they should be ahead of?
Let me amend that. I thought we were just talking strictly the Western Conference.
Oh, okay.
Number 8 for the entire league, that's actually a good spot. Yeah, I have okay,
I was
going to
say,
right
I was
behind.
Like, Holly, I thought our writers were a little friendly with the Pelicans.
Yeah, you guys are. That's actually maybe a little high because I have them right around 8, 9, or 10. So sorry, I misheard that question.
All good, all good. No, but I know I see a lot of people do put the Pelicans a lot lower. It wouldn't be crazy for you to think. I've heard people kind of mention them out of the playoffs, but I think when you have a player like AD, you know, that's not really a possibility unless something were to happen injury-wise. But Corey, what are your thoughts on the number 8 ranking?
I think it's pretty fair. Obviously, with how the teams are, just put them 5th in the West. And I think that's probably where they're going to hover around. Somewhere in the middle of the West. I'm interested, obviously, to see how Julius Randle fits in. I'm a big Randle guy. I like the fact that he can carry the ball up the court himself. He's a high-energy guy. Interested with some of the other pieces they got, like Elfrid Payton. I'm not overly high on him, but you know, he cut his hair, so that shouldn't affect his jump shot anymore, right? But I think it's relatively fair, and I don't know, you know, I don't know how much better the Thunder and Jazz are if this Pelicans team is healthy and, you know, Davis and Jrue Holiday are playing at the level they played in the playoffs last year. I mean, this team could actually be a few spots higher, but I think 8 is pretty fair right now.
Yeah, and kind of like what Ollie mentioned earlier in the show, I could see the West being similar to last year where only a couple games are separating, you know, slots 4 through 8 or something along those lines, just because there's so many good teams in the West and somebody's going to have to miss out. But moving on to this year's additions, you know, we'll talk Julius Randle. 2 years, $18 million, second year player option. You know, obviously he's coming off a huge year with the Lakers, a physical presence. You know, there is some improvement needed on defense. But what were your thoughts on getting Randle on that 2-year, $18 million deal?
It's the biggest steal of the offseason. When you look at what he accomplished, his trajectory, every year he's gotten better. And last year, if you look at his per 36 numbers, he averaged about 21 points a game, 10 rebounds a game, 3 assists a game. Only 11 different players have been able to average that in the last 20 years. So that, to me, screams star. I know he's got his shortcomings. He can't shoot the ball. He's kind of turnover prone. And, of course, defensively, he can take some plays off or even games off. But the talent is undeniably there, guys. And the Pelicans, to be able to sign him for the full MLE, I think it's the biggest steal in the league. And he's going to prove it this season. Simply because the Pelicans are going to give him a chance to shine. And today in media day, he actually said, I picked the Pelicans because I know that I'm going to fit there. They're going to utilize my skill set. And they're right, because everybody talked about Alvin Gentry, for instance, said, we're looking for him to grab a rebound, just push the ball. That's what they're going to be trying to do, where everybody thought they played fast last year. The whole goal, the mission statement this season is to play even faster. And you know what? They're going to be able to, because Randle can do certain things that a lot of guys in the past that play next to the AD can't. Same thing with Elfrid Payton. Rajon Rondo's a little bit older. He's got a lot of miles. I know that during a lot of post-game conferences, I saw him icing down his ankles, knees. He had a lot of tendonitis. So, again, all that wear and tear, the minutes added up. And now you replace both he and Boogie with two super young guys who are just made to run. I'm telling you guys, it's going to be special. Again, getting back to Randle, I think he's going to be in the running for most improved player of the year. I think he's also going to have that good of a season.
I could definitely see him being in the running and finishing top third, if not winning it. As you mentioned, I mean, all of his stats got better. You know, his win shares went up. I mean, PER is kind of a stat that no one cares about now, but that went up. Everything went up. He got better, obviously, between the leg injury the first year. You know, he's a kind of a year behind, but he's only gonna be 24. I'm same with you. I love the fit with him next to Anthony Davis. And this is the kind of guy you need to kind of push the tempo up. I think it's just a fantastic signing, especially for, you know, $8.5 million a year. It's an absolute steal. And I expect him to get a lot of money. I expected him to have, you know, near the max mm-hmm. by some team. And obviously he fell to the Pelicans, and I think this is a really good fit for him.
Yeah, I believe we picked Julius Randle as one of our best new free agent signings on one of the shows early in August. But like you guys said, one thing I think impressed me about Randle too is last year with the Lakers, they had like negative vibes towards him where, you know, they were like, oh, we're going to put him on the bench. We're not going to start him. We want to trade him. We're not going to keep him and all this stuff. And he was able to show some like mental toughness and able to have a really good season where you see other players in that situation where it kind of hurts their game on the floor. I thought that was impressive for Randle. But talking Elfrid Payton, you know, 1 year, $3 million, there may be some potential there. There still needs to be some work. Obviously, we've only seen him in Orlando and Phoenix and both not great teams. What are your thoughts on bringing in Elfrid Payton?
I think it was a good move. The plan was, I don't know if you guys heard this, but it was to sign him to be a backup, to learn, spend 1 year under Rajon Rondo and kind of see can he develop into, you know, a perennial starter in this league. But of course, those hopes were dashed when Rondo's last second kind of split on the Pelicans. But it worked out, you know, for the best, like I've said. And they were able to get Randle instead. But as far as Elfrid Payton, I still think he's got the ability to be a starter in this league. But in looking at the footage, you know, he's going to have to just correct a lot of mistakes. He was so unplayable at times, guys, especially last year, both in Orlando and Phoenix. As to where defensively, it's just this guy's not even trying. He wasn't trying to get around screens. He couldn't stay with his man. And the on-off numbers didn't lie. You know, he was really one of the worst players on a really bad team for too long of stretches. And, of course, that's on top of his ability, not able to shoot the ball. And what other question marks he brings. So there's reason why the Pelicans got him for $3 million. But, again, from what I've been hearing, he's now going to be in a winning environment. So you can't really undersell that. When you come into this league as a young kid making millions of dollars and suddenly those losses start piling up, you know, you can tune out rather easily. So that's what I'm kind of hearing behind the scenes is what happened to him. Because the Pelicans think that, honestly, get this, guys, the biggest thing I heard today, or one of them anyways, was that Anthony Davis and a few others think that both Drew Holiday and Elfrid Payton are going to form to be the best defensive backcourt in the league. Now, we know Drew Holiday can do it, but, wow, to mention Elfrid Payton and say that, in combination with Holiday, they're going to be the best. That's really taken a step forward. So that's how high they are, and that's what he's basically shown them behind the scenes. So we've got to see it, you know. We haven't seen – none of us have been privy to these private workouts, but the hope is there. And you know what? If it doesn't work out, they brought in Jarrett Jack. So they've covered their bases just in case it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I mean, Elfrid Payton, the first couple of years in Orlando, actually played defense, and then – mm-hmm. You know, I think when you're in the losing environment, just the effort dips, obviously, as you kind of mentioned, you know, being around a team that's just not winning. I don't know how much effort you really want to exert on that side of the court. And of course, obviously the jump shot's an issue, but the one thing I really like about Elfrid Payton offensively is the fact that he can do a little bit of everything. You know, obviously he can get to the rim a little bit. He can rebound. He can pass. Not to the same degree as Rondo, but, you know, he's had several triple doubles over the last couple of years. He can do a little bit of everything. And, you know, being around a guy like Davis and Holiday, being in a winning environment, it should elevate his game to another level. And actually, I know, obviously, I didn't hear that soundbite till just now, but I think that's really good that everyone around the Pelicans thinks that Payton and Holiday can be this defensive duo in the backcourt. I think that can only mean that he's doing, you know, the little things and working hard in the offseason.
Yeah, we know the potential is there. It's just about putting together, and I think this is a great opportunity for him on the Pelicans, and we'll see what comes of it.
Now, new hair, new him, right?
Yeah, new hair, new him. Mentioned some of the other, you know, smaller signings, Trevion Blewett, Jahlil Okafor, Jarrett Jack. What are your thoughts on these guys? Or anybody else you want to mention too?
Well, Ian Clark got re-signed, and I think that's a good thing. I know we talked, or one of you guys mentioned earlier, that he struggled to a really subpar three-point shooting percentage. But you know what? He got to just the worst start ever last season, where the first few months he was pretty much unplayable. He was that bad. But you know what? He came around, and today in Media Day, he told us that it took him some time to get acclimated, to find where his role was. As to what he said with the Warriors, it was real easy. I came in either during garbage time or I knew what my role was. It was to shoot the ball whenever I was open. He was asked to do a lot more last season. And according to him, and you know what? Kind of the stats back it up as to where he didn't finally become effective till once he figured out that role. So the hope is he's going to be back, but he's familiar now with what's expected, that he's going to be a much improved player, a much more positive player, I should say, on the Pelicans' behalf. But I think it's more important to actually talk about Jahlil Okafor, who, guys, I've never seen such a bigger body transformation. It kind of reminds me of what Julius Randle did a few years ago, you know, where he goes in kind of a little bit out of shape, looking to this super chisel guy. And then he put, you know, his mouth where his body was in essence, where he said all season, I'm getting the best shape. And he went on to have his best season yet with the Lakers, despite all the drama that happened there. People are thinking the same thing's going to happen with Jahlil as to where, you know, he got down in the dumps. And he talked about all these depression issues that he's had and playing for a losing ball club. And he, you know, he said it really drove him crazy, to where it bothered him and it affected him on a deep level. Now that he's out of it, he says, I can see it's like looking night and day. I feel like I can breathe again. He says, and any kind of issue, he's now getting some therapeutic help by, you know, talking to a counselor or whoever. And of course that body, he says he went and did some kind of strict diet for about 7 months. He tried to be a vegan, but it didn't work out, but he's doing something else similar. and of course the working out. He dropped from about 270 pounds at the end of last season to 250, and he's moving really, really well. So I think he's going to make a nice little impact as to where all these additions, guys, the biggest thing is it's going to give depth. And when you're going to have a run and gun system, you need to have a deep team to withstand both the injury and just this incredible pace you're playing at. And so guys like Julius Randle, Alfred Payton are great, but you know what? So is Julio Okafor. So is, I think, Jarrett Jack. These are all veterans or have talent, and the Pelicans picked them up for next to nothing. So I think they're all going to be able to contribute. So even these smaller signings like Julio Okafor, like Jarrett Jack, and like re-signing Ian Clark, I think that's all going to be a positive for the Pelicans.
Yeah. The Okafor signing is interesting. Obviously, him and Anthony Davis have hung out several times too this offseason, so you like to see that. They're kind of like buddy-buddy. I mean, I got to see it to believe it. I know that I got to watch a little bit of him in Brooklyn. I know Nick did as well, and he just underperformed again. And then looking at the other guys, you know, Ian Clark bringing him back I think was good as well. Yeah, I want to just see if Okafor's body can translate. Obviously, when you're getting that, everyone's in great shape, it feels like. But if, you know, if he was in a slump, you know, mentally and all of that, and he's out of that now, I mean, that does have an effect on your game if you don't believe in yourself and everything else. So I really do hope that's the case and he comes in, you know, and has a monster year.
Yeah, and obviously, being a Brooklyn guy, I've watched every single Okafor minute last year, and I can say losing weight would be big for him because he was super slow last year. So if he's able to move a lot better, that'll help him. But I also think one important for him mentally, not in terms of like being in the dumps, but I think understanding his role and like what I wanted him to do last year so much was just do the small things, you know, rebound, set good screens, play defense, and he still thought that he was, you know, this, you know, top five pick and he could kind of dominate a game. And he did have moments like that where he was great in the post, but that's just not where the NBA is at. So I'm looking for him to kind of adapt his role in terms of what the Pelicans need, and nothing but great things to say about Jarrett Jack. I feel like he's one of the most well-liked guys in the NBA, just a good veteran to have around. And like you guys said, Ian Clark was, I was pretty high in the signing when the Pelicans first got him. I'd like to see him kind of bounce back this year too. But talking departures, you know, we got DeMarcus Cousins, Rajon Rondo, DeAndre Liggins, Jordan Crawford, Emeka Okafor. Out of these guys, do you wish they had kept anybody, or they're really going to hurt losing them? Obviously, Boogie's a big, big loss, but, you know, they filled in other guys and they kind of played better without him last year. What were your thoughts on the departures, Ali?
Yeah, with Boogie, it all comes down to that injury. And guys, he wasn't going to be able to get back to being 100%. And this is even just, you know, for a moment thinking that he can become the guy that was we all got to love pre-injury. You know, Kevin Pelton, a lot of guys have written articles extensively on the difficulty in bouncing back from an Achilles tear. And you got DeMarcus Cousins is a really big guy. He's not necessarily old, but you know what? He's not necessarily a young guy either. So you've got to weigh that in. You know, there's a lot of similarities to what happened to Elton Brand. So expectations are he's honestly not going to be that same guy. He's going to be maybe, what, 80, 90% of that guy. And he's still a really good ball player. I mean, he's got that skill set. He can dribble the ball. He can be a great playmaker. You know, he can extend his range all the way out to the three-point line. So he's not going to be limited by that lack of athleticism. But the biggest thing for the Pelicans was they would have had to rely on a guy who was, if he would have gotten back on the court this coming season, how much would they have been able to rely on him? You know, they need talent. Sure, Anthony Davis, all-NBA player. Same thing with Drew Holiday. He really came in his own. But you know what? For them to be able to justify spending that money on a guy who, honestly, the thought was, from what I heard in the locker rooms, wouldn't have been ready until at least the All-Star break. You know, could the Pelicans have survived and then made the playoffs? I don't think so. I think they would have, you know, basically hooked their anchor to a guy that honestly would have held them down like an anchor, and therefore maybe they would have missed the playoffs. And, of course, all that AD trade talk is going to come back, you know. And, of course, with DeMarcus Cousins, I mean, can you imagine all the backlash that would come back from paying this guy big sum of money just to keep him in New Orleans, and then he's not the same guy. So I honestly don't feel too bad about him leaving. But Rondo was the only one that I was kind of sad to leave, because you know what? All the players expect him back. Front office expected him to come back. But the very last minute, he decided to take a slightly higher offer, and one the Pelicans couldn't match, because the Lakers gave him a little bit more money than the full MLE. And so he jumped at the chance, which is surprising. I'm not quite sure still why he did it, because Anthony Davis expected him back. Drew Holiday expected him back. But it all happened within about a 5-10 minute span, from what I'm told, is where Rondo's agent gives the Pelicans front office a call and says, you guys have 5 or 10 minutes to decide on how much you can offer Rondo. Can you bring him back? And they basically just gave them just that 5-10 minute window. And of course they couldn't do it. So now he's a Laker. So it took everybody by surprise. And it's unfortunate because he was kind of responsible for being that engine, you know, leading the Pelicans to that super high tempo, keeping everybody on the same page when things got a little rattled. And of course, being that ultimate locker room voice, that defensive kind of safety, you know, who's calling out all the plays. They're going to miss him on that front. But other than that, no, guys, other than that, there's nobody else on the roster they're going to miss without a doubt, like they will Rondo.
Yeah, I mean, I think you miss Cousins only if he is 100% healthy. Bringing him back and having him be a, you know, an 80% form of himself, but then still thinking he is the DeMarcus Cousins of old would have just been an issue, I think, and problematic. You know, if he's trying to be the man and he's 80% and then Anthony Davis takes it back, see, I think that would have been obviously an issue. And like you said, you know, he might not even be back till after the turn of the year and maybe even closer to the All-Star break, which wouldn't help this Pelicans team. I think you definitely miss Rondo. The playmaking, the IQ, as you mentioned, in the playoffs, I mean, he was huge. I mean, playoff Rondo compared to regular season Rondo has really been – it's a real thing for whatever reason. Obviously, the regular season is long, so you can kind of pick your spots to go all in. But some of the sound bites from that first-round series, just how smart he is, him calling out plays and calling out sets. You know, I believe we talked about it earlier in the offseason, me and Nick, and I expected him to be back with the Pelicans. I didn't expect him to go to the Lakers. That was surprising. So I definitely think Rondo's probably the one guy you missed the most, especially bringing in Elfrid Payton. And as you mentioned, that the goal was kind of have Payton be mentored by Rondo for a year. So Rondo leaving is probably the one guy they missed the most.
Yeah, and there was a lot of talk during the season, the postseason, about the relationship Rondo had with Gentry, and they just really got along. Mm-hmm. And like you guys were saying about the Cousins thing, it would have been a huge risk for the Pelicans. You know, they don't know where he's going to be. A big man that size with an Achilles injury is never really a good sign. Then they could have locked up money, and I hate to say this, it could have caused a bad thing where maybe Anthony Davis wanted to leave down the road or something if all their money's locked up to Cousins and he's not even up to an All-Star level or something along those lines. But getting into the prediction portion of the show, opening night starters, who you got?
Of course, Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday. Elfrid Payton's a shoo-in at point guard. And then the last two are the toss-ups. And I think they're going to stick with each one more because they're going to need his shooting because Julius Randle's going to start at the four. I'm in the minority on this because a lot of people are saying Mirotić is going to start. And then either Moore or Hill or somebody else can start at the three. But I'm definitely going with Davis, Randle, Moore, Holiday, and Payton.
Yeah, I'm going slightly different. I have Payton, Holiday, Hill, Randle, and Davis. I have Mirotić and Moore coming off the bench.
I'm going to go with Ali because he nailed the sweep last year with the Blazers, so I'm just going to go the same way as him. So he knows what he's talking about. But no, I think that makes sense, and I think you bring in Randle, and you have the option to kind of play. You know, I think Randle will probably maybe sub out soon and then bring in Mirotić. He'll still get his minutes with Davis and vice versa. And I think they just have a really nice combination to have with the bigs. You know, Mirotić, Davis, and Randle. I think all of them kind of can work really well together. So I don't think it necessarily matters who starts. They're all going to see good minutes.
One thing I got to mention real quick, guys, is another reason why I think Randle is going to start simply because that was kind of a wink-wink, handshake under the table type of deal at free agency. That's where the Pelicans were able to sign him at the full MLE money when, of course, he was worth so much more was because they wouldn't limit his ability to shine based on the court. And I think one of the stipulations that go along with that, of course, is being a starter. So I think you've kind of got to look at that situation, too, because it's not unheard of. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but Solomon Hill, when the Pelicans signed him a couple of years ago, they kind of promised him a starter's role, too. You know, this happens throughout the league for teams that are kind of trying to become good. You know, they've either been bad or mediocre. That's the one way you can attract talent is by kind of promising them stuff. So I think I wouldn't be surprised to learn if Randle got promised something similar. And that's why, you know, you should expect for him to start.
That would make sense, obviously, in the showcase his skills and being on a player option, wanting to get big money next year. You're going to get it more as a starter probably. But who's going to be your breakout starter for next year?
The breakout? Oh, I mean, I think you almost have to go with Payton, I guess, then. If he can get his minutes and he shines, because we've seen, as you referenced earlier, he's able to put up kind of triple-double numbers. So if he can do that, and according to Julius Randle guy, or excuse me, Julio Okafor, he said that Peyton's been making everything he's been shooting so far. I mean, we know it's workouts and stuff, but still, that's even kind of impressive because you don't want Peyton. Of course, he's not going to be that jump shooter. He's not going to be Ray Allen out there, but you want him to take those open threes when obviously teams are going to dare him to do so. And if he can make those, that's going to change everything. So I think I'm going to go with Peyton, even though I wouldn't bet on it. But out of all the starters, he's the one most likely to have kind of that breakout season. Unless, of course, you want to go with Randle, who kind of already did to me. But, of course, he's just simply going to get a few more minutes. So, therefore, the stats are going to look a little bit more impressive. But I think they're just going to get the same thing that we saw with the Lakers last year. But Peyton's the one I've got my eye on.
Well, Dan, you make me feel bad for picking Randle now.
No, please do. Please, somebody's got to pick Randle.
Yeah, I'm going with Julius Randle. I just think, obviously – he started the back half of last year. Obviously, he's impressive. We all expect big things from him. I'm expecting him to raise, you know, the points from 16 to somewhere probably to 18, 19, maybe even up to 20, the rebounding to go up. And if he developed any sort of three-point jump shot, I think he could be really lethal. But for me, I think it's got to be Randle in a bigger role.
Yeah, I like Randle. You know, I think Peyton, there's a chance it's kind of like a 50-50 type thing. I'm not 100% sold on him, but I could see the possibility, you know, pick and roll with Anthony Davis. But I'm going to go with AD, and it's like, oh, breakout. But I think AD has another step in his game he can take, and the leadership is going to pick up. And I think this year people are really going to start to refer to him as that top three player, and he'll be in that MVP conversation from opening night into the rest of the season and have a really good chance to win it if the Pelicans win enough games. But breakout bench player.
I want to pick Frank Jackson so badly, guys, because this guy's been doing nothing but impressing everybody that's seen him work out.
Wait, this leads me to – I have a question. We probably got to answer this. What can we expect from Frank Jackson? I was actually wondering that heading into this podcast. I wanted to ask you about Frank.
Well, the thing is everybody's super high on him, and his athleticism at the Combine a couple of years ago tested off the charts. Guess what? He's blown away all those numbers already. He told us that personally, and then, of course – talking Mike G again, that's a Pelicans performance coach who's been Drew Holiday's personal trainer for 8 years. When talking to him, he told me about what Frank Jackson's been able to do. And he says he's literally like Bo Jackson is. He's this superhuman freak who can do move any which way as fast as he wants, jump as high as he wants. And then when you combine that with a guy that's got, you know, a pretty good game as to where he's got that dribble drive game, finishing ability, able to shoot the deep ball. I mean, you're looking at a guy who can literally come out of nowhere and suddenly be a very important, you know, maybe in a 20-minute role, score 10 points, kind of be a spark plug off the bench. So, again, I would love to pick him, but my guess is they're going to bring him along slowly. He missed all of last year due to those foot problems. You know, he's had 3 foot surgeries, guys, on the same foot, and then he twisted his ankle in the summer league, so we only got to see 13 minutes of him there. Luckily, it was his other foot, but, again, he even told us himself that it was kind of a scare to him. You know, he's just a little bit scared of his body at times because, you know, he has suffered through all these injuries. So I wouldn't be surprised if Pelicans bring him along slowly. So therefore, you almost kind of got to go with Nikola Mirotic. You know, if he's not starting, you've got to go with the best player sitting on that bench, and that's Mirotic. But again, I wouldn't be surprised by the end of the season. Frank Jackson's a really key contributor for him.
Sweet. Mirotic is also my pick as well. I think he's got the most offensive punch off the bench. I mean, I expect him to play a lot alongside the starters, but I think he's got to be the lock coming off the bench.
Yeah, I like Mirotic as well, like I said, and just the fit he could have with Davis and Randle. Ali, do you think there's any chance Mirotic could maybe compete for like a Sixth Man of the Year award type of thing if he's having a really good season off the bench?
Absolutely. Just as confident as I am in Randle winning possibly that most improved. If Mirotic does start the season on the bench, he's definitely going to be in running for that because, as you guys have just been alluding to, he's going to see at least 30 minutes a game. And the plan is they're going to try playing those three bigs a lot of minutes together in preseason. And honestly, I think they'll be able to handle it. As for Mirotic, he's going to play small forward, Randle at the 4, and Davis at the 5. The best thing that everybody mentioned today is in order to be able to play big, you've got to be able to remain versatile on defense. You know, you got to be able to guard the smaller guys that are darting around or what have you. And you know what? Those three guys can do it. They can legitimately guard at least 3 guys. And, you know, I've seen AD guard point guards. So with that kind of amazing ability, I think they're going to see a lot of time, not only in court, but even a lot of time together. And therefore, Mirotic is going to get a lot of minutes, at least 30. So he's going to have that opportunity by coming off the bench to be that sixth man because he's going to put some really good stats, guys. He's going to come in, ask to score. And so I'm foreseeing about 17 points a game or so out of him. And then, of course, good rebounding numbers and a few other things as well.
Do you think the Mirotić, Randle, and Davis combination is going to work, or it's only going to work against specific teams?
I want to say it's going to work against most teams simply because I saw Mirotić do a decent job on Durant, who's one of the hardest guys to cover. Mirotić, a lot of times last season, actually guarded a lot of fives when he wasn't, of course, guarding fours. So I saw he could guard the fours and the fives. And then I saw in you know, in momentary instances, he can guard some threes. So all it's going to be about is, can you guard down? Can you chase guys through picks and chase them around on the perimeter? Now, you know, when you're 6'10", you weigh 250, you don't really want to do that. It's hard to ask your body to do that. So that's really going to be the only big obstacle to him being able to achieve something like that. And for the team to be able to play those three guys together. But if they can do it enough, and you know what, this is what I'm thinking, honestly, Nick and Corey, is the fact that, you know, how the Warriors have their thing, playing small ball, and the league's been trying to do that. And, of course, the Pelicans last season tried to go just the opposite route with DeMarcus Cousins. I still think they can do it big by keeping AD out there, by keeping Randle out there, and, of course, and throwing Mirotić out there. You're still going to be forcing other teams to try and have to guard you as well. So when you're getting all these easy hoops at the rim, getting yourself to the free throw line or shooting and making wide open threes, I mean, that's half the battle. As long as you're putting up points, who cares what's kind of happening defensively at times during games, but as long as the production's there. So the fact that I have so much belief in the offense of those three guys, I think they'll be a successful unit as far as they'll see those minutes, yes.
Now, I have a question, and it may be nothing, but I was just curious. Mirotić's numbers did drop when he went from Chicago to the Pelicans. Was that just because of his role in the offense being reduced, or should I not look into those numbers at all?
He was in a bad, bad slump as to where he completely lost his confidence.
He shaved the beard, right?
What's that?
He shaved the beard, right? And that, like, helped him come back?
Bingo. I was getting to that story. Yeah, he was struggling so much. I heard he had told us he was trying anything and everything, all sorts of superstitions even. And he told me that he's not even a superstitious guy, but anyways, he decided just for a new look, and guess what? The moment that beard came off, suddenly that three-point shot started going in, and it's been such a it affected him so deeply that, you know what? He came in the today's media day with a clean-shaven face. He had said at the end of last season that, you know what? I think I'll probably grow back the beard, but you know what? Apparently, he still remembers that slump so well, and he's so afraid of it that, yeah, he's going to stick with a shaven beard because it was night and day. As to where he did a lot of other things defensively, he could guard a lot of guys for, he'd get some rebounds. He just couldn't make shots. So therefore, there was games where he'd just shoot it 6 to 8 times, maybe make one shot and have one of those meager, you know, 4.8, 6 to 8 rebound type of games. But after that beard went off, he became like almost an all-star player. So again, yeah, I think that it's part, you know, once you get in your head too, guys, right, yeah. It's more than just the numbers. It's just in your head where it's a confidence thing. And so if he thinks it may help, guess what? I'm a believer. Go ahead and keep that shaved off because, you know what? As soon as you break your first three shots, I don't want you thinking, oh, here we go again. Let's think, okay, I've got a shaven beard. It's not happening again.
Yeah. Right. Okay. I mean, they're hoping the same thing happens with Alfred Payton shaving his head, and maybe he'll get a jumper all of a sudden. But best case scenario for the Pelicans next year in terms of the whole season?
Best case scenario would be probably getting a 3 or 4 seed out west. You just don't see them, of course, no team surpassing the Warriors. And you've got to think that Houston still has enough guns left despite losing, which I think is going to be huge, a couple of good defenders that they can rely on and just replacing them with Melo. And then Utah. I think Utah is going to be really, really tough. So outside of those three, I think the best case scenario would be right around, like I said, if one of those two teams slip or they get that 4 seed. And, of course, second round in the playoffs with hopes of advancing one more round this year.
How many wins are you thinking, best case wise?
Best case wise, I'm thinking about 53.
What do you got, Corey?
My best case scenario is 52 wins and then being a home court team in the West and probably a second round exit.
Yeah, pretty similar to Corey. I got 52 wins, you know, probably a 4 seed, maybe a 3 seed if someone were to get hurt, but a second round exit most likely. On a negative note, worst case scenario.
Missing the playoffs. All you got to do is either lose Drew Holiday or Anthony Davis for more than half the season. I think honestly they might be toast. But again, in years past, that would have been a definite. As for this season, you kind of get that feeling they've got that depth. They've got Mirotić, they've got Randle. They've got a lot of three-point shooters around those guys. You know, they've got enough pieces as to where you think they can at least tread a lot more water this year. But again, if we're just talking worst case, so let's go ahead and just say it. I mean, missed playoffs for sure.
Yeah, you know, last year Denver missed the playoffs with 46 wins. So my worst case scenario would be, you know, the Pelicans being 10 games over 500, you know, 46 wins, and then missing out, you know, as a 9 seed or a 10 seed, which obviously would be devastating.
Yeah, mine's a little bit darker. Obviously, like Ali said, if Drew Holiday or Anthony Davis were to go down, you know, maybe like 42 wins or something, just because they're sort of pen on those guys, I think the depth will help, but the West is just tough night in and night out. But actual prediction for the season.
Yeah, real quick, I want to say I agree with that. About 41, 42 wins would be the total, the worst case scenario where they don't even hit 500. But actual prediction, I'm going to put them right around 49, 50 wins. I think, contrary to what a lot of others think, I think this is a slightly better team than last year. And again, I'm just going by what how they finish the season, because that's what counts. That's who's still remaining on a roster outside of Rondo. So if they can get that leadership, you know, if Anthony Davis and Drew Holiday can step up and make the right plays, get their teammates motivated, kind of know what's coming, kind of just do more than just play basketball, kind of what Rondo did for them, then they're going to be fine. And they're going to be more than fine because, like I said, there's more talent on that team now. So, yeah, about 49, 50 wins, realistically.
Absolutely shocked. So the Vegas over-under for the Pelicans wins this upcoming year is 45.5, which just feels so low. I'm going over. I'm going to go with 49 wins. And they end up as a 5 or a 6 seed in the West.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to you, Corey. 48 to 49 wins, 5 or 6 seed. You know, probably get past the first round, depending on who that matchup is. But on to the most important question of the show, Ali. What emoji represents the Pelicans for you?
A rabbit. or grab a rocket, but of course you can't rocket because that's but anything that goes fast, guys, anything that produces a lot of fireworks, that's your emoji.
For me, it's the guy who's got like the magnifying glass on his one eye. He's just keeping a close eye on this Pelicans team. I think this is a team that's going to give a lot of team trouble in the West, especially because of having Anthony Davis. And I think Julius Randle's going to be a nice addition. So for me, it's the, I don't know, the Sherlock Holmes emoji.
I like that, the Sherlock Holmes emoji. Ali, you and I are kind of on the same page. I had the running emoji just because of the pace of the team. And like you mentioned, some of the other guys, you're going to even make them run more. But league pass-wise, where do the Pelicans sit 1 through 10?
Oh, league pass-wise. I mean, when you're scoring a lot of points and you're doing it in such an exciting way and you've got high flyers, you got a lot of attitude. I mean, you guys mentioned it, Drew Holiday, Point, and Nurkic might have been the one single biggest highlight of the playoffs last season. So, yeah, they're one of the most exciting teams to watch. So league pass-wise, you got to think they're – I don't want to say top 5 team, but they're definitely a top 10 team.
What do you got, Corey?
My league pass rating for this is going to be an 8.5. I think anytime you have an MVP candidate on your team, especially coming off the playoff run they had last year, Holiday and Randle, I think this team is going to be really interesting. So for me, it's 8.5.
I don't know if this is the first time we've had the same league pass rating, but
I have second. This is the second
time. I got 8.5 as well. I didn't mention it enough, but Anthony Davis is one of my favorite players in the league, and he's just a guy I feel like you just have to watch because he can have such a crazy game right out of nowhere. Next thing you know, it's a 40 and 20, and maybe he'll throw in 5 or 6 blocks and a couple assists in there too. So 8.5. But this is a hypothetical. What TV show would you watch over the Pelicans? Obviously, they're your favorite team. You cover them. This is more so a gun to your head, and you can kind of shout out your favorite show.
Oh, what if I don't have a favorite show right now? I got bored with the Game of Thrones, believe it. I mean, I would have said Game of Thrones a while back, but I don't know. I don't really have a current favorite show, so this one's easy. I don't have one.
Or you can swap out another New Orleans sports team or something like that.
Oh, don't make me talk about the Saints. That's not fair.
Hey, Drew Brees.
Everybody loves the Saints and Drew Brees and what they can do and the fact he's still playing and he's such an icon in this city. Yeah, okay. I'll go with the Saints. Thanks for giving me an easy out.
For me, I am going with The Office for this one.
That's a good choice.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched The Office like 7 times over at this point, so it's at this point, like, I'm pretty much not going to watch it over any team. You know, the Office is hilarious, so anytime I want to laugh, I can put that on, and guaranteed any episode I put on, I'm going to find a laugh.
Yeah, maybe they come back for like a reunion show and you got to skip a Pelicans game.
I'm not a big fan of reunion shows, so I hope not.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, The Office is, though, great because, like, you could just watch that out of nowhere and not even be any part of the season, just have a good laugh. Don't judge me. I'm going to pick anime here, and I'm going to go with Dragon Ball Super. So that's, like, my favorite anime show, but I'm sure no one really cares. But any last thoughts you guys want to get in about the Pelicans?
I just want to just nail the point that the Pelicans are such a deep team this year. I think that's what the both the head coach Alvin Gentry and the general manager Del Demps talked about and what they kind of tried to do this offseason. So it's basically they're trying to give themselves a chance to not only run at this fast pace where they're not going to have to rely on AD, Drew Holiday, for 40-plus minutes a game. It's the fact that they'll also be able to withstand some injuries, which, you know, every team's going to have some bumps and bruises through the course of the year. So that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at the depth of this team. And when you realize it's a lot of young legs, a lot of guys with something to prove, it bodes well for the Pelicans' chances. So, again, I just feel like too many of the national media are just sleeping on this team. And, of course, they've got to prove it and everything. But you know what? They proved a lot last season. So it's funny how they don't remember that, do they?
People seem to forget things very quickly. Corey, any last thoughts from you?
Anthony Davis will finish in the top three for MVP voting. Not sure if he'll win it yet.
And I'm not even.
He did that last year, though, right? So exactly. Come on, be a little more bold.
Well, yeah. I can't get bold because I think Antetokounmpo and LeBron are in the conversation too. Like that race is going to be really fun though this year. I'll say that.
Yes.
I have one last question for you, Ali. Who do you think is going to make a bigger impact on the Pelicans this year, Darius Miller or Solomon Hill?
I think I can easily say it's going to be Solomon Hill. He looks in phenomenal shape. He knows he had such a disappointing season where he basically sat around for most of the year. And as for Darius Miller, who's, you know, a great three-point shooter, he does very little other things well on the court. And, you know, he was even asked about it today. What did you work on in the offseason? And he just said everything. You were hoping he maybe would talk about defensively. Because you know what? He was out of position a lot, and he caused a lot of bad foul shots to be taken by the other team. That's where he's found three-point shooters, you name it. So I think it's an easy one. I think even Darius Miller might even lose his rotation spot and, you know, to somebody like Solomon Hill. So I'm like, this one's easy, Solomon Hill.
Gotcha. I was curious, actually, that was going to be my next question, because I know Darius Miller last year shot so well from three, but the question was, what else could he do on the floor? And I was hoping you were going to tell me that he worked on XXX thing, but I guess not. But that wraps it up. Ali, big thanks for having you on the show. Tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter, find all your work.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Nick, Corey. This was fun. Yeah, you can follow everything we do, guys, over at The Bird Rights. We're located at SB Nation's network. And, of course, you can listen to all of our podcasts, too, and read our articles over at The Bird Rights. They're listed something. Usually there's something fresh every day for you. And give us a follow on both Twitter, Facebook as well. All the same name, one word, The Bird Rights. And we're always, you know, keeping you entertained with something funny, something newsworthy, or just some good analysis.
As always, Corey, pleasure talking hoops with you. You can check out all the previews on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Big thanks to everybody who's listening.
Absolute pleasure, fellas.